Penguin Audio presents Annie by Thomas Meehan, read by Annie Potts. Chapter 1. Long ago. The still and dark early hours of the morning of the 1st of January, 1933. A light snow was falling in the chill, deserted streets of downtown New York. Time slowly passed, and then the wintry quiet was broken by the clanging of the bells, tolling 4 a.m. in the steeple of St. Mark's in the Bowery. A couple of blocks from the church, on St. Mark's Place, in the second-floor dormitory of the New York City Municipal Orphanage Girls Annex, an 11-year-old girl stood alone at a frosty window. Shivering in a thin white cotton nightgown, she listened to the tolling of the bells as she watched the snow swirling downward in the light of a street lamp. From time to time, she looked yearningly one way up the street and then the other way down. She was waiting for someone to come for her, to take her away from the orphanage. But no one came. Thin, somewhat short for her age, the girl had a slightly upturned nose and an unruly mop of straightish, short-cut red hair. But her most striking features were shining blue-gray eyes that seemed strangely to reflect at the same time a deep sadness, irrepressible joy, and a sharp intelligence. Her name was Annie. In the cold, drafty dormitory, the other girls, 17 of them, had long been asleep, mumbling and occasionally crying out in their dreams as they turned restlessly in narrow beds under scratchy, drab army blankets. But Annie had been awake all night. Earlier, trying to fall asleep, she'd been kept awake by the street sounds of New Year's Eve revelers, shouting voices, drunken singing, the honking of car horns, and the raucous blowing of noisemakers. Long after midnight, though, when all had grown quiet on St. Mark's Place and the snow had begun to fall, Annie still hadn't been able to sleep. And at last she'd got up from her bed to stand at the window to keep a silent vigil through the snowy night, to wait. For as long as she could remember, Annie hadn't been able to sleep on New Year's Eve, because New Year's Eve marked the anniversary of the night 11 years earlier, when she'd been left as a 2-month-old baby in a tan wicker basket on the front steps of the orphanage. Someone had rung the doorbell and then run off into the night. Annie had been wrapped in a faded pink woolen blanket and had been wearing a broken half of a silver locket around her neck. And there had been an unsigned note pinned to the blanket. "Please take good care of our little darling," the note had read. "Her name is Annie, and we love her very much. She was born on October 28th. We will be back to get her soon. We have left half of a locket around her neck and kept the other half so that when we come back for her, you will know that she's our baby." Because she'd been left at the orphanage on a New Year's Eve, Annie had gotten it into her head that somehow her mother and father would come back to get her on another New Year's Eve. So each year, while other children counted the days until Christmas, Annie instead counted the days until New Year's Eve. But year after year, she'd been disappointed. Her mother and father hadn't come for her, and now it seemed pretty certain that they weren't coming for her this year either. As the snow began to fall more heavily now, Annie sighed and rubbed her eyes to keep from crying. "They said they loved me and were coming back for me. It's in my note," whispered Annie to herself in the dark. "Where are they? Why haven't they come for me?" Annie clasped the broken silver locket that hung around her neck, always, night and day, and squeezed it tightly to her breast.
"Mama! Mama! Mommy!"
The littlest of the orphans in the orphanage, 6-year-old Molly, had wakened from a nightmare and was crying out for her mother. But Molly's mother had died 2 years before in a car accident, and her father had been killed in the same crash. So although she was an extraordinarily beautiful child, Molly was an orphan whom nobody wanted to adopt. An orphan like all of the other girls in the orphanage, except Annie. Annie was different, because she had a mother and a father. Somewhere.
Mama! Mommy!
Cried Molly again, waking up the girls in the beds around her. Shut up, shouted Pepper from the next bed. Yeah, can't nobody get any sleep around here, grumbled Duffy.
Mama! Mommy!
Screamed Molly again. I said, shut your little trap, Molly, said Pepper, getting angrily out of bed, picking Molly up and shoving her down on the floor. At 14, Pepper was the oldest and the biggest of the orphans, a pug-nosed rapscallion with a face full of freckles and long tousled hair that was even redder than Annie's. Ah, stop pushing the poor little kid around, said July. She ain't done nothing to you. 12 years old, the sweetest of the orphans, if not exactly the prettiest, July had received her name because, simply enough, she'd been abandoned as a baby at the orphanage on the 4th of July. She's keeping me awake, ain't she? Pepper snapped back at July. No, you're keeping us awake, said July. You want to make something out of it, said Pepper, walking over to July's bed. Oh, the Jack Dempsey of the orphanage, said July. And in a moment, she and Pepper were rolling on the floor in a shrieking, punching, hair-pulling fight that woke up 8-year-old Tessie in her bed at the far end of the dormitory.
Oh my goodness, they're fighting and I won't get no sleep all night, whined Tessie,
a pale, frightened girl with blonde pigtails, a thin, beaked nose, and scarcely any chin at all.
Oh my goodness.
Annie had been silently watching from the window, and now she stepped forward and broke up the fight between Pepper and July.
Come on, you two, cut it out and go back to bed, commanded Annie, pulling the fighting girls apart.
Aw, nuts to you, Annie, muttered Pepper, and glowering as she stomped back to her bed. But Pepper didn't try to pick a fight with Annie. Although she was a good deal smaller than Pepper, Annie was recognized by all the orphans as the toughest among them. Even Pepper was afraid of her. The smartest of the orphans, too, and their acknowledged leader, especially in their never-ending battles with the headmistress of the orphanage, Miss Agatha Hannigan. Pepper started it, Annie, said July, pushing Molly down. I know, said Annie, patting July on the shoulder, but you gotta go back to sleep, all of you. Okay, Annie, said July, climbing back into her bed as Annie went to comfort Molly, who was still crouched on the floor. Kneeling beside Molly, Annie pulled the child into her arms. It's all right, Molly. Annie's here, said Annie, gently stroking Molly's long black hair.
It was my mama, Annie,
said Molly, tears streaming down her flushed cheeks. We was riding on the ferry boat, and she was holding me up to see all the big ships, and then she was walking away waving, and I couldn't find her no more, anywhere. It was only a dream, honey, said Annie, drying Molly's eyes with the sleeve of her nightgown. Now you gotta go back to sleep. It's after 4 o'clock.
Annie, said Molly, read me your note.
Again, said Annie.
Please, said Molly.
Okay, Molly, said Annie. And from the battered wicker basket under her bed, the same basket in which she'd been left at the orphanage and in which she kept her few belongings, Annie took out the note and started to read it aloud by the pale light that slanted in from the street lamp outside. Annie had folded and unfolded the note so many times that it was nearly falling apart. It was written in a round, feminine hand on a square of pale blue cardboard. Please take good care of our little darling, Annie began. Her name is...
Oh, no, here it comes again, groaned Pepper.
In the years they'd been together in the orphanage, Annie had read her note aloud to the orphans an average of perhaps 2 or 3.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?